Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and tonight we have a special program featuring the winners of the 2009 Writers' Cafe Contest, sponsored by the Writing Center of the University of Pittsburgh. With us tonight are the five readers reading their winning pieces of poetry, fiction, and creative nonfiction. We'll also talk with writer Ellen Smith about the Writers' Cafe and the Writing Center. But I want to begin with the first place poetry winner, Shannon Spees. Shannon Spees is a senior at the University of Pittsburgh, graduating with a degree in English writing. She is the current poetry editor for the Three Rivers Review. Hi, Shannon. How you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, congratulations on winning first prize. That's great.
Thank you.
Okay, so you can go ahead and begin.
My first piece is entitled The Master's Arrangement. In a small office, shielded from daylight's clamor, a man finds relief in soaking in the woman's shadow. A beauty who commands Beirut with one coy glance, fatal to the anxious mind as a bomb threat. To the man whose daily dangers pass over as clouds, acknowledged only as manifestations of nature's cycling, this woman, distilled from lightning, is pure energy. In silence that passes between them, she reflects the demons, unacknowledged, in Lola. He has lost that gust under his wings, that presence which lent him feathers to fly above ceilings of history. He is now grounded in alleys, the woman's coal dark eyes. Her fingers flit among his scattered pages, packaging up his phantoms and lies of hope. My second piece is entitled Ring Cycle. We have but 4 days to join in epic. I am searching for the tragedy in this. You, my king, are pushing the beds together, and your old arms slide towards me when I sleep. I am unaware. The great climax occurs when I stiffen enough to keep from flinching, and your breath rasps against my neck, and I fall away from myself to enact an ultimacy without cringing. The willingness to submit to the other is the watermark of true love's letter. Please, Lord, watch over my intentions. I am drawn by the need to promise something to anyone, fall into a vast current of longing, and perpetuate a myth. The Gospels taught me there will be seeds that drop eternally from the cracks in the earth. But these seeds are the dark arms whose circle we break. It is midnight, and a child rests in him. This next piece is untitled. I witness the sea, its currents and detritus, with the scent of her smoke gone from my nostrils. I wander the edge of the crater where all failed loves gather, in a herringbone suit, blasted by salt, shoes that leave my wrinkles in the sand. The waters of the strand mount in the movements of two young bodies, a rippling flesh which burrows and crests in frantic rhythm. These are the lovers, a lust that climbs meters without footholds, choking the sky with thrill. I witness the form I take, its brokenness, blindness encroaching from left and right. A nude blonde beckons from the waves. Lola, let me wander in to test the cold.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you very much.
Nice work. That's Shannon Spees, first place poetry winner in the 2009 Writers' Cafe Contest. And I also have with me the writer Ellen Smith. She teaches poetry and literature at the University of Pittsburgh. She is the coordinator of the Writers' Cafe, along with fiction writer Jeff Martin. She's been awarded the Academy of American Poets Prize, the Zone 3 Rainmaker Award, and the Hyper Age Magazine Award for her poetry. Smith was also awarded a 2008 Pennsylvania Council on the Arts Fellowship and has work forthcoming in Kestrel. Hi, Ellen. How are you?
I'm good, Jan. Thanks for having us again.
Yeah, it's become a yearly thing that we have the winners of the Writers' Cafe on, and the work is always really wonderful. So you're doing something right over there.
Yeah, the students are doing something right. They've been coming to Writers' Cafe. It's the sixth year. And I think that this past year we've seen a real spike in attendance and participation from people who are writers, writing majors, as well as people from other departments, and even people from up the street, you know, some people from CMU. It's been really exciting. So the students are up for writing and doing their work.
Okay. Can you tell people out there what the Writers' Cafe is?
Sure. The Writers' Cafe, we've been doing this for 6 years. We're housed at the Writing Center at the University of Pittsburgh, which is a facility that supports the Pitt undergraduate community and graduate community in all phases of the writing process, all types of writing. And 6 years ago, we started at the Writing Center a program where we could just have people come in on a Friday afternoon, have some light refreshments, and basically do a writing jam session. So we had usually Pitt faculty who are practicing writers or people from the community who write, who facilitate the session, give some prompts, think of exercises or a theme. And really, a jam session is the best analogy I can think of, because people just run away with the writing. Sometimes there's some critique, but mostly it's about celebrating the production of new writing and just bonding with other writers.
Mm-hmm. That's a nice idea, because, you know, often the Writing Center at a university has a bad reputation of the place that people don't want to go. In the past it's like the place where you go if you're having problems with your writing. So this helps to redefine that, I think.
Yeah, I think that the Writing Center director, Gita Kotari, who herself is a wonderful creative writer, and the associate director, Jean Grace, they've been very supportive in trying to add more facets to the Writing Center so that we can serve writers literally at every level and every type of writing, from putting together a resume for one's first job search after a BA, to working on a fantasy novel if you're a physics major. You know, mm-hmm. We want to really be able to keep writing alive that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for all your work and for bringing these writers down.
Well, thank you, Jan.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests tonight are the winners of the 2009 Writers Cafe Contest from the University of Pittsburgh. The second-place poetry winner in the Writers' Cafe contest is Amy Hayes. Amy Hayes was born and raised in Buffalo, New York. She's a freshman at the University of Pittsburgh and hopes to pursue film studies and English writing. Hi, Amy. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. So you have a couple poems to read for us?
Yes.
Okay.
The first one's entitled On the Porch. Coming over the grass, weed, mud, hill. Wet dog smell, wet paws, and his wet, warm tongue panting, running home to Marcus. And Marcus calls here boy because Marcus thinks it will rain harder. It will rain hard, gobs of stinging stalactites that will penetrate thick dog coats harder. Harder than any washing machine on a spaghetti stain. A kind of rain that Marcus would prefer not to have his dog running in. So Marcus heaves the wet, shivering dog onto the splintered porch, wrapping him in the blanket that is dog's, the red-brown plaid blanket that usually covers the back of the truck, but now is covering wet dog. And Marcus is cold, but he has tea. And dog is cold, but he has blanket. And the ground is pelted, but it needs water. And Marcus pets smelly dog ears when thunder claps, so the dog stays. The next piece is about Milton Ragovin. He's a photographer, but he's also the neighbor down the street. So this is entitled Milton Ragovin Watching a Documentary of Himself. He sits in his chair, the picture man. He is old now and small. He started writing at 89. I wonder at this. How many never lived till their age of poetry? He reads his poems. His dead wife is smiling from the dusty TV screen. Milton sits in his adjustable chair. He is standing and reading on the DVD. We are watching him at 92. Milton is 99. Anne helps him read. Slides of his beautiful pictures roll across the screen. His beautiful words pour from his 92-year-old mouth. On the screen, his hair is brushed. On the chair, it is not. A baby is in a photo. Now it is 11. Now 21.
Thank you, Amy. Really nice poems.
Thank you.
That's the work of Amy Hayes, second place poetry winner in the Writers' Cafe contest. Next up, we have first place fiction winner, Rachel Hutchinson. Rachel Hutchinson was born and raised in Springfield, Oregon. She is currently a sophomore English writing major and a studio arts minor at the University of Pittsburgh. Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Doing quite well, thank you.
Oh, good. So you have part of a short story, is that right?
Yes, I'll be reading from the beginning of my short story entitled Bees Can See UV. I am owed this, I yelled, as a 5-year-old boy with dirty blonde hair and fierce green eyes, hands cupped around a butterfly. Adults always told me that catching a butterfly took patience, but I caught it through perseverance. I watched my hands unfold, clamshells revealing a pearl, a beautiful monarch. I looked around as if I was at the North Pole, staring down at the rest of the world, a triumphant boy, one with the cloudy whites, part of the sky and the sun. I spotted my mother sleeping in the grassy but muddy and shredded soccer field and ran towards her, zooming past the swing set croaking in the wind, my shoelaces dragging in the sharp bits of sawdust under my own feet, tripping me, sending me rolling through the sharp bits of sawdust. I watched my hands unfold once again. I injured my pearl, fractured her wing. She walked unsteadily from my palm to the tips of my fingers, tickling with tenderness, and then stepped over the ledge, tumbling into the sharp bits of sawdust. When my mother ran to stop the incessant bawling, I didn't have the heart to tell her I killed a butterfly. I told her I tripped, and it hurt, and that I should have tied my shoes better. It's true, I wasn't great at tying my shoes back then, and that cost me a life. I am owed this, I grinned when I got my chaos theory paper back, brushing my fingers through my inch-long hair, reminding myself I needed a haircut. My hair had darkened since my butterfly-catching days. I heard a scoffing sound come from beside me. I'd noticed Wendy before. She often came to class positively radiant, but today, her dark curls and soft features were completely hidden by her hood. She stared out from me within this large, atrociously orange Princeton sweatshirt. She sat with her legs curled up beneath herself, her shoes alone on the ground below her desk. Her look was chilly. What? I asked. Don't worry about it, she said and fluttered her eyelashes at me. Her gaze lasted just a second too long, so I jerked out my hand in awkward introduction. A few words stumbled out. She interrupted, said, I know who you are, Warren. I sit by you every class. True enough. Class started before I could say any more. All through class, I thought of what I'd say next, how I'd engage her in conversation after class. But I didn't get the chance to employ those words. A few minutes before class ended, she rushed out of the room, wiping her eye with the back of her index finger. That weekend, I found her in the bathroom at some party. She'd had a bit too much to drink and wasn't feeling so hot. She was wearing that same awful orange sweatshirt. "Hey, Warren," she croaked as she squinted at me while I sat down next to her, leaning my back against the bathtub. "What's with the sweatshirt? Seems a little big for you," I said. "It's not mine. I took it." Lengthy pause. "I take people's clothing sometimes, things I think no one would miss. How would no one miss a big orange sweatshirt?" "You know, butterflies can taste with their feet," she said as she pressed her tiny socked feet against my shoelaces. She giggled that drunken giggle and I hugged her softly. She kissed my neck and then returned back to the original conversation. "You know, it's harmless. I don't mean to take their stuff. I guess I'm just more sentimental than I'd like to admit." She paused, cringed, and then her body contracted violently as she coughed into the toilet. Then she wiped her mouth and continued. "Around this time, I was starting to smell the smells that reminded me I was in the bathroom, all stomach acid and feces and an ineffective, flowery cover-up scent. But before that thought got very far, she continued, "Like, I don't do it for attention, you know, just to have a little trace, you know, something dependable." She paused for a while, and I just stared at her. The hood was down and she looked kind of pretty, but I wasn't drunk enough to tell her that. The next week, I strolled through our campus after dominating a midterm and found the campus infected with the beauty and warmth of spring. I spotted Wendy at a distance, which set me smiling. She was sitting under a particularly wise-looking tree in a buttery yellow, soft-flowing sundress. I began walking towards her and a cluster of about 10 scrub-wearing nursing students crossed my path. I tried to wrestle through them. Then I heard this buzzing around my ear, so I swatted and then yelped in response to an obnoxious little bee sting. The nurses continued on their path, looking back at me and struggling for breath in fits of giggles. Wendy looked up from her book and laughed. I smiled at her, shaking my head and rubbing my neck. "Bees," I said, and she nodded, understanding. "I always wanted to be one," she smiled. "What?" I said, preoccupied with pain, noticing the tear in her skirt and sitting myself down. "A bee," she chuckled. "What, so you can sting me?" I grinned, taking in the colors and shapes of her face, the dark shadow above her eyes, the daintiness of her nose. "No, bees can see UV. It's incredible. Can you imagine being able to see more colors?" Soon she became an integral, if not disruptive, part of my weekly routine. I sat with her under that tree every school day for about 3 weeks. Some days we talked for hours, some days just for a few minutes. I felt, I thought, I flew those 3 weeks. I smiled and rushed and raced and recalled to her every detail of my life. She listened intently and dug into me with questions about my life. I'd tell her stories that got her to giggle and glow and cover her mouth delicately with her fingers. One conversation sticks out in my mind, the only time she confronted me with a flash of what seemed like overly passionate and disproportionate anger. "You didn't kill the butterfly," she shouted. "It just died." Completely taken aback, I blinked twice, waiting for something else to be said. She looked embarrassed, self-conscious. At the time, I gave it little thought because she quickly picked the conversation right back up. She shook her head and said, "Sorry, I mean, what did your mom say about the butterfly? She must have told you it wasn't your fault."
Okay, thank you very much. That's Rachel Hutchison. Good job. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guests tonight are the winners of the 2009 Writers' Cafe Contest from the University of Pittsburgh. The next reader is the second-place winner in fiction and also second-place winner in creative nonfiction, Jennifer Liu. Jennifer Liu is a sophomore at the University of Pittsburgh studying English writing and art history. She's a native of Garnet Valley, Pennsylvania. Hi, Jennifer. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So you've won the fiction and creative nonfiction.
That's right.
So what are you going to read tonight?
Tonight I'm going to read a nonfiction piece called Applied Mathematics. It's written in the format of a math test, and it uses the language of mathematics as a way of questioning both the writer and the reader to consider issues of law, identity, and continuity. Each passage is my attempt to solve the problem to a particular relationship I've had, either with myself or someone else. The first section is called Trigonometry, Identity. You say, tell it slant, and I think, about the day I hear that mine are almond, exotic, mysterious. I am living in Virginia at the time, and this is what people tell me, that my race has made me unique, beautiful, a commodity, a fetish, that I will be smart, talented, gifted, a bad driver, that in the future I will sometimes be ridiculed for the way that I look, that down the line I will sometimes be the only minority in the room, that later I will sometimes date a boy, never knowing if he has heard these things about me. Submissive, subservient, daddy complex, tight. Sometimes he will whisper things in my ear. I've never been with an Asian girl before. They tell me that I will take it because it's only natural when you're born like me. You learn things about eyelids, how they can be different, how it is possible to have a second fold that sits between eyeball and eyelash. It is called a double eyelid, how this is desirable, how the women that your mother talks to on the telephone spend money on procedures where a surgeon will cut into that tender flesh, make a slit that will heal permanent. To be more Western, to create the illusion of a prominent brow bone, to get that eye to look a little more like a white woman's, that perfect O formed by the lips of a woman who has felt a man. Girls will say that you are blessed, blessed to be born with that second lid, blessed to look the way that you do. You learn the ways in which you are lucky. Number two. Geometry, parallel and perpendicular lines. I remember the night we slept in the bed beneath you, and you said that the lights across the street used to bother you, but tonight they weren't so bad. And as I lay there with you above, I imagined that maybe, just maybe, you were pressing your body close to the sheets, to the planks, to the bottom of everything, so that you could be near me and the lights weren't so bad. I remember the night that you rubbed the fingers of your hand against my back, held my fist in yours without a word. The mouth that tasted like onions, wet, and your feet were cold, but you couldn't feel it. The kiss on the knee, that was the night when you said you cared and that you thought I might give a damn about you too. And I remember the night that you held me tight as I cried. Because I cried, and I thought about the kindness of strangers. Number four, constants. The scar is a half moon. It is two parentheses linked together by a purple nebulous, a solipsism. It is two fingernails laid across dirt and blood and grit. It is a bruise on the skin of a peach that gives way to the teeth that break it. It is a parking lot at the church my parents like. It is a late afternoon in May, a pregnant rainfall. It is a pair of sandals with no tread. It is a foolish leap that breaks into a run, that breaks a fall. It is not the sting of antiseptic or the place left on the heart by the boy you thought could be yours. No, that will come later. For now, it is only skin deep.
It's the work of Jennifer Liu, second place winner in creative fiction and creative nonfiction and fiction. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really nice. Okay, our next reader is first place winner in creative nonfiction, and her name is Noor Abdelghani. Noor Abdelghani was born in Alexandria, Egypt, and moved to Pittsburgh with her family in 2006. She's currently a junior at the University of Pittsburgh, working on a Bachelor of Science in psychology and a Bachelor of Arts in English Writing Fiction. Hi, Noor. How you doing?
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming, and congratulations on winning first place.
Thank you.
Okay. So go ahead with your piece.
I'm going to read from my piece, Voices, that is an autobiography written using the songs that I used to listen to as a child. Nested on the Walls. In 1996, we are back in Alexandria, and my mother is a proud professor of literature. She drives a white hatchback Daihatsu Charade. The inside furnishing is gray, and like most Egyptian car owners, the first thing she does when she buys the car is upholster the seats, because the original leather needs to be kept in good shape for when the time comes to sell the car. In the glove compartment, she has all of Ali al-Haggar's tapes scattered outside their boxes. His voice is contemporary, strong, conveying meaning simply by the way he stresses on the syllables of vigorous Arabic words. Every morning on our way to school, she plays a politically oriented tape about the regressing quality of life in Egypt. I am just starting first grade. Regression is a word I cannot yet comprehend. Do you know what that means? She asks, after singing along with a verse hidden between repetitions of the chorus. My sister and I stare at each other. We are competing for the right answer. Mariam wants to win by virtue of the 4 years between us. I want my mother to think I am wise beyond my years. The spider nested on the walls, my mother repeats from the song, in the tone of the educator she was born to be. We shrug. She goes on. A spider nesting on a wall needs to be left alone to set up its web. If there are spider webs on the walls, that means no one has touched these walls in a long time. I knew that, I say casually, thinking of the tangle of webs on my grandmother's crystal chandeliers. Do you know what that means? Her hand shifts the gear of the car as we stop in a red light. Yes, it means no one has come in a long time. Yes, it does. But what does that have to do with Egypt? Mariam glances at the traffic building up behind us. It's slow, she says, and I nod in agreement because I still trust the certainty in her voice. Yes. But really, it's a critique of the government and the president and the things that are bad and people have not made an attempt to make change. So things will just get worse. I look out the window at the people driving next to us. The streets look good to me. I don't see anything wrong with the city. My eyes are covered with a seal of childhood ambition and submission. I want to disagree, but the strength in the singer's voice is overpowering. She drops us off at school, and all day that phrase, the spider nested on the wall, haunts me with a fear of what I may not yet understand. What he knows. El Rayis Mit'el sings in a heavy Upper Egyptian accent. Girl, your father is pleading you not to step out in the sun. All the eyes that saw you sent their cavalries in your rescue. What does it mean? I ask my father. He stops humming. I don't know, he says, more taken back by why I am asking than by the question itself. It just means what it's saying. I sit in the back of his red car and listen carefully to the song. The deep voice does not belong to the father. The pleading man makes no appearance in the song, neither does his daughter. But Mit'el is the voice that somehow knows.
Thank you. That's the work of Noor Abdelghani. Nice work. It's the writing of the winners of the Writers Cafe contest sponsored by the University of Pittsburgh. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.